After yesterday's global market sell-off, today investors are taking a breather. Live from London, this is the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service. I'm Victoria Craig. Good morning. Here in Europe, stock benchmarks are little changed a day after financial markets were unnerved by a round of fresh coronavirus restrictions across the continent. On the public health front today, European leaders will meet to virtually discuss coordination on their pandemic response. Yesterday, the European Commission announced further efforts to bolster test and trace programs and put in motion a plan to negotiate agreements with vaccine producers. Still, worries about the effect second national lockdowns will have on the European economy are top of mind for the European Central Bank, which meets today. ECB President Christine Lagarde told a French newspaper that any economic recovery seen during the summer now risks losing momentum due to new shutdowns. So what tools does the central bank have left in its toolbox? Karsten Breske, head of global macro strategy at ING, explains.
Normally, the ECB would have liked just to wait until December, you know, collect numbers, collect new growth forecasts, and then announce additional stimulus in December. But now with the new lockdown announcement, I think there is enormous pressure on the ECB to come with a preemptive strike. So they're really going to have a hard time. And I must say, it's really like flipping a coin whether or not they will announce additional stimulus today or wait until December.
What kind of stimulus do you think they'll unleash?
Most of it is obviously symbolic, because the biggest part of supporting the economy will have to come from government. So what the ECB can do is increase the size of the bond purchase program by something like 300 or 500 billion euros. So to give a clear signal to financial markets that these bond purchases will at least last until the end of 2021, maybe even longer. Another thing that they could do is provide even more or even cheaper liquidity to the banks, because this is now clearly also the banks will be needed to bridge all the financing and funding needs for companies, which will suffer again from the second lockdown wave.
As you hinted there, the ECB and other global central banks had been screaming from the rooftops earlier this year that more fiscal action from governments was needed, that monetary policy alone couldn't solve this economic crisis from coronavirus. And this summer, Europe followed through with a joint debt issuance or bond program. Does that give the ECB a little bit more flexibility now that they don't have to step in right away?
Yeah, I think this is the biggest game changer, also the biggest difference when you look at Europe in this crisis and in the 2008-2010 crisis. Back then, it was all about austerity and structural reforms. This time around, really, governments really lived up to the promise, lived up to expectations, were extremely quick, and also they put enormous money on the table to stimulate the economy. So this helps the ECB. This takes away the burden from the ECB to be the only European crisis manager. But still, financial markets love the ECB. They look at the symbolism coming out of the ECB. And if an ECB now announces, yes, we also stand ready to support this economy, the symbolic impact will probably even be bigger than another, whatever, 10, hundred of billions are coming from the governments.
Karsten Breske from ING, thanks so much for your time.
You're welcome.
Checking the numbers now, stock markets in London, Paris, and Milan are up around 0.2% this morning, while shares in Frankfurt are rising 0.6%. U.S. stock futures are also in the green ahead of the opening bell on Wall Street. They are set to open about 1% higher. And shares of luxury retailer LVMH are up about 0.5% in Paris today. This morning, it announced its on-again, off-again merger deal with Tiffany is on again. The BBC's Stephen Ryan has that story.
The great romance and one of the biggest mergers in the fashion world is back on. French luxury giant LVMH and jeweller Tiffany today agreed to a lower merger price, saving a deal that was close to collapse. Things turned frosty last month when LVMH got cold feet, saying Tiffany was overvalued in a time of coronavirus. That led to tit-for-tat legal action in Delaware, which is now likely to be settled. A new lower share price values the deal at $15.7 billion, down from an original price of $16.2 billion. The other details agreed last November remain unchanged, and the deal is expected to close in January. LVMH boss Bernard Arnault says he's looking forward to working out how best to integrate the companies and provide a new home for the iconic blue Tiffany box. I'm the BBC's Stephen Ryan for Marketplace.
The next 5 years of economic growth are on the table in Beijing this week. Leaders of China's ruling Communist Party are meeting for a plenary session, which might sound insignificant, but as Rana Mittler, a professor at the University of Oxford's China Center, explains, this is an opportunity for the world's second biggest economy to outline its long-term strategy.
Essentially, the weather has changed very significantly in China in terms of its relationship both with its domestic economy and the wider world because of the COVID-19 pandemic. And although there's tremendous secrecy around this meeting, unlike American or British meetings of this sort, you don't tend to get leaks on the side. There is, I think, a very strong feeling that in terms of direction for years and maybe even beyond that to come, there will be a lot of important decisions made on the economy, on internal politics, and on China's global strategy.
So what are we expecting in terms of the five-year economic plan? Is there likely to be a big focus on building up China's domestic technology industry, for example?
Domestic technology is going to be absolutely at the heart, I suspect, of what is said. It's all part of a wider phrasing that you hear a lot in China now, which is the idea that China has to create self-reliance, particularly in areas like technology, where they're very worried that supply chains to the Western world, the need for American semiconductor chips, the need for basically a lot of essential products that can't be made in China, that has to be fixed. But they are not looking to cut themselves off from the outside world. They still want markets elsewhere. So that's the dual element of the dual circulation strategy. Remains to be seen if it can actually be pulled off, of course.
With the U.S. election now less than a week away, there's been a lot of attention on the effect that the trade spat between the U.S. and China has actually had on the Chinese economy. From China's point of view, has it made the country take in more exports from the U.S., or has it just found ways to trade without America?
I'd say that it's been important and in some ways slightly damaging for the Chinese economy, but it hasn't been the sort of transformative issue that I suspect that the Trump administration wanted it to be. Part of the problem is a sort of mutual contradiction, which is that President Trump really wants China to buy more American goods, but he doesn't want to sell them the kind of goods that China wants to buy. The fact is that over time, this particular trade agreement, I think, is not going to be one for the history books. It's going to be much more about that bigger story of where the next generation of economic ecosystem is set up that's dominated either by the West or by China. We're talking about things like the installation of 5G telecommunications in places like sub-Saharan Africa or Latin America. Those are the emerging markets of the future, and I think it's there that China is really looking for its global strategy while looking to double down on producing as much at home as possible.
Rana Mittler, professor at the University of Oxford's China Center. Thanks for your time.
Thank you very much.
And here in London, I'm Victoria Craig with the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.